listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla.
Hey, this is Kelty Knight from Lady Gang.
Hey, it's Steve Austin from the Steve Austin Show.
This is Heather Dubrow from Heather Dubrow's World.
Hey, this is Rob Riggle.
And Sarah Tiana from Riggle's Picks.
This is Caitlin Bristow from Off the Vine on Podcast One.
This Veterans Day, I'd like to give a special thanks to all those who've served in the armed forces.
From the Army, the Navy, the Marine Corps, the Air Force, the Coast Guard, and the Reserves.
Because of your bravery, we can live without fear.
Because of your valor, we can soar into the bright future.
Because of your sacrifice, we don't have to sacrifice the liberties that we hold so dear.
We could not do it without you.
Thank you again for your service, and all of us at Podcast One hope you enjoy a safe holiday weekend.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for telling a friend about CarCast. I'm Adam Carolla. That is Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea.
How are you?
And this is brought to you by Castrol. Castrol CarCast, everyone. Also brought to you by Geico. Geico.com. Castrol, of course. Titanium Strong for maximum engine performance. And ZipRecruiter. You can visit ZipRecruiter.com/car. We'll tell you about that in a minute. So everyone fresh off of SEMA.
Yeah.
I was there for half a minute. You were there for multiple days.
Yeah. Still missed 60% of it.
Yeah, I was just running around going to – I was on the other side going to – I stopped at the JB Weld booth. Got a bunch of JB Weld stuff. But I'm excited about adhesives. You sent me some pictures. So I was on the manufacturer's retail, whatever side of it.
Show.
And I was not on the side that has all the cool cars.
Right.
But you were.
Yeah.
And you saw some pretty cool cars and you sent me some pretty cool pictures. There was a 308 Ferrari, which I thought was really cool. There's some Z cars that was cool. There was a Gullwing, a Kindigit.
Yeah.
Gullwing.
There's two Gullwings, but the Dave Kindig one is pretty impressive. Impressive enough that we're going to see if we can get him to call in and tell us about it, because I want to know what's built on. And I know it has a full chassis underneath. A Roadster shop built a chassis for him.
Mm-hmm.
And but I'd like to know more about it. It looked fantastic. You're right, that 308 looked great. It had sort of a 288 GTO kind of body on it. Certainly interesting color. It'd be nice to know more about that. But running around, everybody's taking pictures of these things. You don't always get a chance to, like, talk to the builder or even see anybody there. It's just a car in a booth.
Right.
You know? So now sort of the internet verse has to sort of come together and go, who built this car? And then you can start to figure it out.
I love to see what people can do with cars. I'm really happy that they're maybe tearing a page out of the Singer playbook, which is going with better platforms to jump off of, or certainly more interesting platforms to jump off of. Taking a Mustang notchback or even fastback, taking a Camaro or certainly like Chevelle, SS or traditionally guys would build Mopars or Chevys and they'd start off with a Dodge Challenger or something, and it's just such a shit platform to jump off from. And I know people are like,
they're
oh,
doing it to sell parts in the aftermarket. Will make all the
I don't care
restoration
I'm still angry
and
I still my feeling was like, if you want to make a super cool car, start with a platform that's a good platform to jump off of. And what I'm saying is like, you take something big and Mopar-y and dodgy and boxy, and it's just not a good starting point. Now, you can shave the door handles and shave the bumpers and pull the bumpers in and lower it down and do this and do that, but it's still sort of starting off as a refrigerator box. Starting off And then you breathe on it and you weave all your magic, and it looks as good as a 71 Dodge Challenger or Charger can look, but it still doesn't look like it would look if it started off life like that Ferrari 308, because you're already halfway home. I mean, Singer is amazing because Singer has such a great jumping off point,
right,
with their platform, that they take that car and they go, well, what if we made the flares a little wider, and what if we made the rims a little deeper, and what if we made the mirrors a little smoother? And next thing you know, you have one of the greatest looking sort of pieces of sculpture in the world,
yeah,
right? And in the past, my beef has just been taking, sad to say, but I don't even know how they do it, but I would include a Corvette in the bad jumping off point. And I'm not even sure why, because it's got a long hood. It's pretty sleek. It should be a good car to jump off on, but I've not seen many Corvettes that I enjoyed.
Yeah, most of the Corvettes that I saw, and there wasn't that many, were early generation Corvettes. There was a couple like 70s, you know, but there was like 60, you know, I don't know, C2 Corvettes.
You're a good example of an American platform to jump off of, and I have to dig deep because there's not too many of them, is the mid-80s Mustang SVO. Is that an SVO?
Yes.
Yeah. Right. That's kind of a good,
yeah, the turbo car
platform to jump,
yeah,
off of.
Because it's kind of, it's, you know, it's not too different than most of the Fox body cars, but it has a few things that make it a little bit special. So you can, you know, you could do a V8 car and make it look similar to that, you know. But
yeah,
you know, because it's kind of a more kind of an underground piece. Not,
you know,
a lot of people modifying
it's
those.
A good car to build is a Capri.
Right. Did you see the Maverick? There was a Maverick there.
Maverick is a weird jumping off point, but it's smaller,
yeah,
and thus probably better.
Oh, man. They did such a good job on this one, too. We'd have to find the picture. It was in the Bear Racing, Bear Brakes booth, the Maverick. That thing was pretty cool. But, you know, SEMA's not all about the cars. It's really about the parts. And I would say the overlying theme for the parts this year was largely computer controlled stuff. Listen to the shows that we put up during SEMA week. We went around and talked to a bunch of people. You know, you have electronic transmission controllers, but now there's an added layer where you can control it with your phone through Bluetooth. So you can change, mm-hmm, shift firmness and things. You can do it on the fly. So if you want to drive to Vegas, you make it nice, and then when you get there, you want to do some autocrossing, you can change it on the fly. It's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
John Hotchkiss has coilover suspension that's all adjustable. Manually, it's 8-way manual adjustable, and then you can preset it with your phone, again, and you can set it to soft, firm, or auto.
Mm-hmm.
And it has an accelerometer. There's almost like a computer box, and when the car shifts left or right or accelerates and decelerates, it jumps to those preset shock settings. Very cool stuff. It's like magnetic ride, but you can bolt into your muscle car.
Right.
You know? And he'll do specific kits, but then he'll do universal kits as well.
There were some Z cars that were pretty cool.
Yeah. The one thing I will point out is the fuel injection technology. Like, we have sort of two schools of fuel injection. We have sort of the mainstream street car kits, Holley and Fast EFI and stuff, and then we have some of the stuff you see on your race cars, Motec, significantly more money. These guys are catching up because they're selling so many kits and doing so much R&D that all of the like the NASCAR racing stuff that uses any sort of fuel injection runs Holley EFI. They're probably running a $12,000 version, but us in the consumer market are getting sort of a pared down version that's just as powerful. It's some pretty cool stuff.
Well, let's liken it to like home entertainment. You know, if you've been around long enough, you remember when a 42-inch plasma TV was $6,000.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's for rich people. And then later on, I remember there was this box. It was like called the Kaleidoscape or something. And it's like, it's $50,000, but you can hold 1,000 movies in here. And it's like, God, that's a lot of money. But imagine it holds all the movies. You never have to, you know, put in a disc or whatever it is. And obviously, there are no moving parts. So when there are no moving parts, it just gets cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. A Rolex Submariner is never going to get cheap, or is never going to be $80 because there's too many moving parts. But a digital wristwatch in the 70s was $300, and then at some point you got one when you filled up your car with a tank of gas, like the Arco. So the no moving parts in the technology, and the thing about the electronic fuel injection is it's some moving parts, and those parts are always going to have to be manufactured, and something's going to have to actuate them and move them. But all the other technology is a non-moving part, and that price is going to keep going. And as the volume goes up,
that's right. It's a volume game as well. And as the Hollies and the fast EFIs of the world can sell, you know, hundreds or thousands of units, then it brings the overall price down. But for them to do that, they need to market it and get it out there and say this is something you can do and easy to do. The self-tuning kits have gotten so good and so smart that, you know, you can take your carburetor off, bolt on what looks like a carburetor, but it's a fuel injection system. You obviously got to hook up a high-pressure fuel pump. You type in a couple parameters, your cubic inches, maybe some cam specs if you have them, wheel size, gear ratio, and then just drive around the block a few times and it tunes for it.
It's
so accurate now that when you put the car back on the dyno to fine-tune it, there's not much to do. You don't have to do anything. It's done. Like
I applaud this new world we're living in every time I build one of these race engines, like, oh, you need a MoTeC system. Like, how much? That's $17,000. Like, geez, that's a lot. And you think about it, in a way, it is like that flat plasma TV.
Yeah.
It's not so much about $17,000 worth of stuff. It's that no one else does it.
And right, the more people, because no one else does it. And look, if you were racing full time with a team and a season, you would use a lot of the things that thing offers. But now what are we really using it for? In vintage racing and things like that. Like, how much EFI, how much powerful system do you need?
Right.
Right? How much data logging are we doing? Zero.
Right. So it's good that the consumer market and the Hollies and the Edelbrocks and all that kind of stuff are catching up. I've also seen what looked like, and maybe I was just thumbing through one of my vintage car magazines, but some stuff, you know, they have the new products in the back kind of thing.
Yeah.
There are some side draft Weber vintage carb, the kind of stuff we run on all the 510s and the Datsuns and stuff like that. And you'd run them on a Jag and everything else that's now fuel injection, but you couldn't tell by looking at it. You know, they finally kind of made pretty authentic representations visually of what that 44 side draft Mikuni or Weber looked like. But this is fuel injection.
Yeah, and why not? I mean, just think of, you know, the drivability and the benefits of it that make it kind of cool. Be able to get in there and fire it up and kind of drive it around. And if you can monitor air fuel ratio and things like that with an EFI system, I mean, that's what it's all about.
All right, we'll take a look at some of these cars. We'll put them up on the site as well. First, I'll tell you about ZipRecruiter. You know, it's not smart. Job sites that overwhelm you with tons of the wrong resumes. You know what is smart? ZipRecruiter.com/car. You go there. Let's say you're running a shop. Let's say you need some new employees or some better employees or some fresh employees. ZipRecruiter, unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't wait for candidates. ZipRecruiter finds them for you. Yeah. Powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes, identifies people with the right skills, education, experience for your job, and actively invites them to apply. Ooh, they're headhunting, man.
Yeah.
Rated number one by employers in the U.S. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. Exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/car. Try it out for free. ZipRecruiter.com. ZCar.com/car. Try it out for free. So you send me some pictures of Z cars.
Yeah, obviously we know you'd like those, and it was kind of cool to see that, you know, a handful of them are showing up, and some pretty crazy builds, you know, some pretty wild wild builds. There's the orange one that our friend Randy Jaffe had done with the Z Car Garage, I think, built it.
Yeah, and it was the Jägermeister livery, which is great. We love the Jägermeister. It always looks good with the orange and the yellow and the brown, and just everything in Jägermeister looks cool. The Z cars look good, and the flares look good. And my only beef is there are things in cars like there are things in women, and it's just a kind of a thing where you go, well, what do you, you know, what looks good in a woman? It's like, well, you do the math, like a big wide ass and no breast. You know, you go, well, that's not a good look. And then you go, well, then what is good look? Well, nice tight ass and big breast. You go, oh, okay, that's a better look, you know. And there's this sort of certain truths, like rim dish and a rim always looks good. The Jag E-Type is the best looking car in the world, except for it doesn't have dish in the rim.
Yeah.
And the Ferrari Lusso from the mid 60s has a real dishy spoked rim, and a dishy spoked rim is always awesome looking.
Yeah.
And I don't know why the folks that make the cars don't understand that.
People forget that there's a good spoked dish rim.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Look no further than the Lusso Ferrari for that. Now, the other part that makes those Ferraris look good and cars look good in general is when the hood stops and the car continues.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's even just 4 or 5 inches, but not having the hood go all the way out to the front of the car is a great look. And unfortunately, the Z cars don't work that way. The hood goes all the way out to the front.
Right.
But if you put a G-nose body on it, you put the front end body on it, you put it on like the car that we had the Bob Sharp sort of tribute car, then it looks awesome.
Yeah, that one looked good.
So if you're going to do a Z car, put the G-nose body kit on it and don't have the hood come all the way out to the front. Aston Martin in their DB9 screwed up. Aston Martin was one of those companies that in the past, in their DB4s and 5s and 6s, the car started, the hood went back, and it was inboard. Now, the best is Ferrari. Ferrari will have 3 foot of space before the hood opens, like on one of their race cars.
Yeah.
But or you can go the 935 route and just make the whole front end a clip, like a Miura or a 935. That looks good, too.
Yeah.
But the hood just coming to the end and stopping doesn't look good. And if you would have got hold of me, or if the Aston Martin guys would have figured out, I mean, we're looking at my car. You see the hood stops 9 inches from the front of the Genius.
Yeah, this is the Bob Sharp car.
It just looks so much better.
Yeah.
The Aston Martin guys, I'm mad at them. The DB9, the hood stopped at the end. They didn't have no more car.
Looks great.
Car looks amazing. So, all right, take the pictures down, Max Paddock. It's going to make me wish I still had it. The point is this. If you're going to do a Z car, if you're going to do any car, don't have the hood come all the way to the front edge.
Yeah.
The other thing about cars that looks bad on Zs is big, fat, ugly markers. The big side markers. And the big side markers are just a DOT thing.
Yeah.
It's just something that, and I don't know.
And you can, because that's such an easy thing for the most part, an easy thing to eliminate or flush or smooth out, or, you know, it doesn't always have to be something with a big chrome bezel around it sticking out, you know, 3/4 of an inch off the body, like a weird zit on the side of your car.
Whether it's a Ferrari, whether it's a Datsun, And I don't know, are the Datsuns may have had them in Japan because Japan's pretty tough and they don't have a wraparound taillight or whatever. But you take a look at like a Ferrari Daytona and for that matter, a Lamborghini Miura or whatever, and they would put those big chunky markers on the side. And my thing is, as long as you got that car down to bare metal, then get a little sheet metal and do a nice butt weld and get rid of that big fucking hole in the side of your cars. Yeah. Because it looks like what it is. It's an afterthought. Somebody said, put this in. And the Ferrari Daytona is the goddamn worst. The reason the Ferrari Daytona is the worst is because between the back of the fender and the back of the car, it's like 5 inches.
Yeah.
You have this little area, and they've shoved in this 4-inch fucking marker, and it looks like
like off of a trailer or something.
It looks like,
you know, like
shit.
Off of a U-Haul trailer.
It's always so weird. I know you guys have heard this, but when people do full ground-up restorations on those cars, I'm always like, just get rid of that thing. And they're like, well, that's how it came. It's like, well, that's not how it came. It's how it came to this country, but it's not how they drew it up in Italy.
Right, yeah.
So just put it back to that.
It's a parts bin thing.
If somebody gets angry and doesn't like it, then we'll get out some blue tape and my jigsaw, and I'll put my carborundum blade on there, and we'll just fucking cut a hole in it.
Right.
And we'll put it on. How about that?
It's fine.
But I bet they're going to like it without it.
Yeah.
So one of these Z cars was done up in the theme of my Camel pace car, but it had the big fucking chunker marks on there.
Yeah, we've got, it was kind of the Camel theme, right? Yeah. This one here, we're looking at a picture of it.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know who built it. I apologize.
I think it was the guys from...
But you're right. Look, it has that graphic like the Camel GT car, the swoopy, you know, multicolored lines. And in the front, right behind the headlight, right in the middle is just a huge side marker. It just breaks up the whole line.
Yeah. I think the guys at, what's it called? RMZ or whatever. What's the Japanese tuner guys?
Yeah, I forgot.
Like their TV shows on Velocity.
I forgot the name of the thing.
They built one of their cars. I got to figure it out. I talked to those guys.
Yeah, could be them.
I think one of the Z's is one of those guys. Hey, Chris, 39, Idaho.
How are you guys?
Good. How's it going?
Good. I was just wondering, over the summer, you know, chasing classic cars, Wayne Carini, the first 3 or 4 episodes, he kind of made mention of Paul Newman collectibles and vehicles. I was just wondering if you've ever had him out to the shop or had him on as a guest to talk about Newman Racing.
I have not. I've run into him a couple of times. Mm-hmm. I think I ran into him at Amelia Island. I think I ran into him maybe at Laguna Seca. I like Wayne. I like his show. If Wayne's listening, please take this in the spirit in which it's intended. Wayne Carini is a very nice guy.
He is.
And he's a very knowledgeable guy.
He's
not dynamic. He's not funny. He's not anything. He's just very good at what he does.
Right.
But this speaks to the current state of automotive shows on TV, that Wayne Carini is my favorite show.
Yeah.
Because all that guy does is putter around and go, this is Stutz Bearcat. This is from 1931.
Yeah.
It was originally canary yellow, but it's black. But we're going to put it back to yellow in time for Amelia Island.
Yeah.
And I go, I'm scintillating. I'm in. And the reason I'm in is because every once in a blue moon, he stumbles onto a Miura or a Lambo 400 2+2, or at least there's some variety in his cars, and it's not just guys with tattoos on top of their hands arguing with each other about Chevelles.
Yeah.
This is the fucking state of car shows. Now, of course, if anyone did a car show about going to Goodwood or racing at Rennsport, then Wayne Carini would be knocked off the leaderboard in terms of my favorite shows to watch, because there'd be other shows that didn't involve assholes arguing over American junk.
Yeah.
But that's all we have.
Yeah.
And then there's Wayne Carini, who again, not funny, not charismatic, not dynamic, but he walks around and looks at some interesting cars.
Yeah. And that's good enough. You know, I've had him on Shift and Steer. He's been at the SEMA show, he's been on the show, not this year, but he's in the past. And I did talk to him and said, you know, we've got the Newman car, and I try to get him to sell you the Volvo, the Newman, you know, Volvo. And he was great. He was great on the show. But, you know, part of it is like he, you know, he's in Connecticut or wherever he is, and it's, you know, doesn't get out here that much. And when he does, he's, you know, he's working. So it's tough to get him in the studio. You know, hopefully he still knows he has an open invitation anytime. We'd love to have him on, but, you know, and every time the Discovery
Channel
people, I like
Wayne Carini, but you must see it through the lens of fuckstick finding piece of shit in barn and offering a guy $200 for it, and I'm supposed to be interested in a world where there's like so much good out there.
Yeah.
There's so many cool cars. There's so many cool events.
The Netflix show where they lift a smart car. Like, who? Nobody wants to see that. Nobody wants to see it.
It saddens me. I'd go on a tirade, but I've already done it. But I'm angry. I'm angry. there's so many good events.
Thanks,
so many
Chris.
Good cars.
Thanks for the call, you're Chris. Right.
But I do like I do like Wayne. I do like his show. But I would like a show where I went to Goodwood and raced a car better.
Yeah.
They just don't have those shows.
They don't have it. Not yet.
Not yet.
I'm going to tell you guys about Geico.
Right, thank you.
Everybody's got a to-do list. You drop off dry cleaning, you pick up some milk, and now you can save hundreds of dollars on car insurance to that list. You don't have to drop off or pick up anything. You just go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. So if you want some extra money in your pocket, this is the most rewarding to-do you can do today. Just go to geico.com. All right.
Love me some Geico.
So, yeah, that Z car that we were showing earlier that was based off the Camel GT car that's owned by Daniel Song, and he built it with Eric Bizik at JDM Legends. And
JDM Legends, that's the show.
I got too many, TMZs and JDMs.
Here's them talking about it.
Oh, okay. Right. I like this show.
We started looking around to see what kind of cool liveries were out there, and the one that kind of really struck us was this one that was used on the Camel GT.
I don't remember getting a call.
This one was built by Bob Sharp Racing on the East Coast, and they use this car specifically for pace car duties. I mean, of all of the 70s liveries that we came across, this one to me really had that true 70s feel, the orange, the brown, everything about it. You know, I mean, it's definitely 70s, but that's why I like it, and I think it turned out awesome.
Oh, look at that marker in the back. Yeah. Ugh. Max Pata.
Those guys should call it. You don't know paint codes.
You don't know anything about anything, right? But you know those markers are bad, right?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
It's right in the middle of the line he was talking about.
Yeah. And Adam, like, it's crazy how something that is, you know, 5 inches by 2 inches just totally changes the look of a car.
Show my car one more time. Also, I don't know. It's a weird. We also live in a weird world where I own that car. It just seems like it'd be something to bring up in the discussion of talking about the car. Not saying I feel slighted. There's an extra added whatever if you go, oh, Adam Carolla owns this car. It just makes it. That makes the story you're telling or whatever you're conveying that much more interesting.
Yeah.
Look, if it was John Wayne's grandson, I'd still say it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I'd go, the real car is owned by John Wayne's grandson. This is Geno's. That's why it looks better and it doesn't have markers on the side of it.
Yeah. Behind the front headlights or anything, like it looks so much cleaner. And those lines that we're talking about, the whole pitch that guy made with the lines, not broken up by the side markers, looks good. I love the Camel car.
I like the Camel car too. Everyone loves the Camel car.
Yeah, everyone loves the Camel car.
It's a weird piece.
It was fun to bring it to Monterey. That was one of the one cars that Nissan really wanted up there, and I'm glad it went.
Yeah, I don't know why. Again. The marker thing is not only the side markers look like shit in a car that's just a solid color.
Yeah.
The side markers in a car where you're doing swoopy, pinstripey lettering, sorry, you're doing lines around the fenders are literally just getting in the way of your pinstriping. They're literally breaking up your swoopy. You're taking this sort of curvy, swoopy thing, and you're putting a marker in the middle of it. And here's some artistic license that you don't need to take. The original car, which I own, doesn't have the markers on it.
Yeah.
So if you're going for a feel-alike or even a tribute, remove the markers.
All right. How do we feel about the front-mounted mirrors, the fender-mounted mirrors? I get it's a very much sort of a JDM thing, you know, a lot of the Japanese car thing, so it makes it one of their traits. But I guess my feeling is most mirrors kind of annoy me to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that I need that much attention put on the mirror.
Well, here's the thing, as I like to say, if I'm doing a tribute, a clone, or feel alike, you know, in the world we live in, you know, when you watch those bad movies, those bad, like, Where Are They Now? Or you know, Tragic Early Deaths or something. And they'll go, like, it was the 60s. It was California. People were on the beach. And you hear generic music that sort of sounds like Beach Boys.
Yeah, yeah.
But they can't clear Beach Boys. So they do a
they got
feel
Beach
alike.
Boys with a Z.
No. Thank you. No. It's not the spelling of it. They're going to sound.
No, I meant the cover band.
The cover generic, band.
The spinoff.
It sounds like fun, 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 but it's not quite fun, fun, fun. It's just fun, fun.
Yeah.
So, yes. It's so they do a feel alike. There's sound alikes. There's feel alikes. But if you're going to do a feel alike, sound alike car, then look at the real car.
Mm-hmm.
The real car did not have mirrors mounted on top of the fenders by the headlights, as in the Japanese style, because it was never in Japan. It was built by Bob Sharp in Danbury, Connecticut. So don't put them on your car.
Yeah.
And then so people can go, yeah, but that's what we do. And I'll go, okay, but not on this car, because this car never had those. But I get the thing of like, well, it's a kind of our version of that car. And
well, the mirror on the race car, I think, is the real close flush tucked by the corner of the window.
Yeah.
It's a way better.
But the mirror's like, this is our signature. I don't know. To me, the side markers, get rid of them.
Yeah.
But also go full Geno's. Get a Geno's kit.
If you're doing like a SEMA build, the car doesn't need mirrors. And then let's say you're building it for a client and he wants to drive it. Yeah, you can put the mirrors on afterward. I say the mirror should be magnetic, like the Starsky and Hutch light that slaps on the roof.
Mm.
When you want to drive the car, just stick the mirror on.
Mm-hmm.
And then anytime you get a show, you pull up to your cars and coffee, you pop it off, you throw it under the seat. No mirror.
What's the custom license plate say? The was that a episode of JDM that I missed?
No, that was just like a
just
like
online
YouTube
stuff
video thing. Yeah.
I ran into some of those guys. Did you run into those guys at the Laguna Seca?
I don't remember
some of the JDM guys. They're nice guys.
Yeah, I remember meeting them. But there was another Z car. It's this gray one with kind of the BRE stripes on it. It's pretty wild. It's got a crazy splitter with all the little stabilizer rods and stuff. It's big. It's over the top. But take a look at this. Because SEMA every year now does the show. Like, they do like a one-hour special, Battle of the Builders.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like an overall winner, but then there's a couple different categories. And they won like Young Gun or something. Maybe it's like a rookie builder or a new first-timer to Battle of the Builders. But it was neat to see a Z car win. Good quality, a lot of build work. Some of the stuff is a little over the top, not really my style. But little recognition for the Z cars.
Yeah, I didn't like, good. I didn't like all the splitters and all the braces and all the weird ground effect stuff. And again, no Geno's, just hood coming all the way to the end.
Yeah.
I feel like I need to stand in everyone's shop and explain to them how things work.
Well, to be fair, I would say the guys who did the Camel GT sort of tribute car, they can't say they don't know about the Geno's car because in the video they showed the picture of your car.
They just wanted to pick up the color scheme
of
that.
Yeah.
But I would also argue that the color scheme on my Camel GT car is great, not because the color scheme is great, because it's super indicative of the early 70s. It just screams like this is early 70s. It's not like this is a great, like there are colors that are great together. Like if you look at Michigan's Wolverines and you see like this dark blue helmet with the yellow stripes on it, like a Sunoco race car or something, that's a great color scheme. Those are two good schemes that work there. This is not a great scheme. This just says this is 1973. Like, pow. Part of what makes it, though, that is the crazy flares and the swoopy, rounded, you know, sort of like a go-go, like chicks from the 60s who were like had hips and bosoms on them. Like, it's part of it was sort of their build.
Yeah.
You know, not just the bikini they're wearing, but that kind of big hips, you know?
Right.
And
it's really like having clothes fit your body type.
Right.
And it's that.
And my thing is the color scheme minus the swoopy hips is sort of, now it's on a more modern day waif model and it needs that bosomy hippies 60s go-go hip.
Yeah. Look at the rear dish on that Camel GT car. You could stick your head in there.
We're looking at it.
We're just admiring the car. It's in the other room.
That's a cool
Let's
car.
Wrap this up and go stare at it for
go
a while.
Stare at it. No, I do like the part about this hobby we're in is I love the fact that people can appreciate and or be attracted to one of the weirdest and maybe least valuable cars in my collection, which is a race car, which it never really was a race car. It's a pace car. It was built by Bob Sharp. All it has is an interesting story and a cool look, but it's not like, oh, it ran at Le Mans or was driven by Ken Miles. It doesn't have any of that. It's just funky town with a funny story.
Yeah.
And everyone, when they come to the shop, kind of goes right to it and goes, look at that.
Look at that.
And that's what's cool about the hobby, right?
Yeah. That one's just a straight up art piece, which is still fantastic.
And I'm glad that the guys like JDM and stuff are doing, you know, tributes.
Yeah.
Because that just helps the guy with the real McCoy.
Yeah,
I would have no idea what that car is worth. Though.
I have no idea.
It's
not
calculable.
Yeah, and we knock on those guys, but it was fun to see them do that car, and it looked good there.
Thank you. All right, let me tell you about Castrol Edge. Heat, friction, viscosity, breakdown, man, all results in lack of performance, up to 10%. Castrol Edge, engineered with fluid titanium technology, physically transforms to be stronger under pressure, helps fight friction, and also three times stronger against viscosity breakdown than leading oils.
Yeah.
It's Castrol Edge. Unlock the true performance in your car's engine with Castrol Edge. All right. Me, Anaheim Grove with Rob Riggle, truly one of the good ones, doing a live
podcast.
He's
great, right? He's so funny.
He's great. November 30th. Go to Chassis and check out the Pluto TV and 501, channel 501. Download it for free. Check it out for free.
You get it on your app. You can watch it on your phone.
Watch it on your phone. Yeah. I also check out Adam Carolla Goes Racing. Not guys with tattoos and beards argue, but actual cars and actual places that are actually cool. And you can sign up at getvero.co/ace. Did I say that right?
It's get.vero.co/ace.
There you go. And lots of good stuff and lots of good places and lots of good. All right.
Also,
you got
Adam, just heads up, John Singleton posted a picture of him with Willie T. Ribs on Instagram saying, remember that name, Willie T. Ribs.
That's right.
Not every day you get to be in the presence of a legend. And then goes on to talk about all of his awards and historic moments. So.
Good things coming.
Good things coming with Uppity. We'll keep you guys.
You got your Uppity hat on.
Oh, it's due, yeah. It's actually talking to a black guy at a basketball game wearing my Uppity hat. I was a little worried the other day. All right, we'll keep you posted on what's going on with that. Until next time, Adam Kroll from At the Moderator. Andrea saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.